Descartes' Dreams, The Dreams, January 26, 1987. First dream, I dreamed that I was in a place, maybe like an auditorium, or maybe near an auditorium, maybe I hadn't gotten there yet. And there was at least one, maybe two people around. I think what happened in the beginning was Stephanie told me that she had heard out at Window Rock that the Indians believed that they were more creative if they cut off at least one hand. And this bothered me. But I was trying to cut off my left arm, my left forearm, just below the elbow joint. And I cut into my arm, cut down. There wasn't any blood. It's kind of like slicing through cheese, but it hurt an awful lot. It hurt a lot, and it really bothered me, and I wanted to stop. And then I'm in the auditorium, and it's like somebody has just finished giving a talk, and Stephanie was there, and she's getting up, she's getting ready to leave, and we're standing there amongst the seats and everything. It was somewhat like the Chamazal Theater in its layout. We were up in the seats, and I told her, look at my arm. I'm having to cut my arm off here. And I don't want to do it, and it was really hurting. And I thought, I can't do this, and the knife had bent. Not the knife itself, but the direction of the cut had bent, and I was cutting back up towards the joint now. It was this great big flap of skin I had cut really deep, a couple of inches, 3 inches, 4 inches down into the skin, but was unable to cut through the bone because I was already in too much pain. But I knew I had to keep cutting until I cut the arm off, so I woke up, and I was lying on my left side with this is my left arm that I'm trying to cut off here, and I was lying on my left arm on the elbow. It was in a little bit of pain, but nowhere near as much pain as I had felt in the dream. And I looked out the window. As I was lying, I could see out the window, the east window of the bedroom. And the moon was shining in through the cracks in the Venetian blinds. I could see it out there. And it was somewhere between 1 and 2 o'clock in the morning. Anyway, I went back to sleep. I stayed awake long enough, though. I forced myself to stay awake long enough so that I wouldn't go back to the same dream. I didn't like that dream. And I believe that the second dream, I'm pretty sure this is the second dream, though the second and third dreams, I may have gotten backwards, but I think this one coming is the second dream. I was in Venice, Italy, with Stephanie and her mother. And we were, I think at the very beginning of the dream, we were in a gondola, probably a motorized gondola. Ahead of us was another motorized gondola. And in it were Don Regan and George Shultz. And Regan was wearing a dark blue or black suit. And Shultz was wearing a powder blue jogging outfit, sweats. And a big wave came up. I mean, here we are motoring down one of the avenues of Venice where you wouldn't expect big waves to come up in our gondola, following this other gondola, this other motorized gondola. It had that kind of box thing with the curtains in the middle that a lot of gondolas have. I mean, it was bigger and it was motorized. Anyway, this big wave comes up and drenches Shultz and Regan. And completely drenched Regan. And Shultz fell out of the gondola and into the water, but he was walking on it. But not because he could walk on water, but because it was so shallow and it just looked like he could walk on water. And then we switch, then the scene switches. Or actually, I don't know, because I don't know where that scene with the gondola comes in for sure. But anyway, we will go to a plaza. We were in a plaza, piazza, I guess is what the Italians call it. It was Stephanie and her mom and me. And There was a little bit of water around. There's always a little bit of water around Venice, I guess. And we were talking about how Venice was sinking into the Adriatic Sea, and how the pollution, the air pollution, from all the internal combustion engines was destroying all the sculptures. And I was pointing to the sculptures and everything, and there were little holes in them. Little holes, I guess, about, an inch and a half in diameter, where the stone had just crumbled out. They weren't all the way through. The holes were only about an inch to a half inch deep. And I was pointing at them saying, see, here, where all the statues and all the masonry is crumbling. And then two reporters from the BBC came up. They were a somewhat round-faced, they were British, a somewhat round-faced woman, two young women. Somewhat round-faced young woman with brown hair, and her companion had blonde hair. The blonde was the camera operator and sound operator, and the other one was the reporter, the brown-haired one was the reporter. And they wanted to interview me. And I don't know why. But I wanted to get into their pants, and they looked a little bit eager too. So I was trying to find a way to get rid of Stephanie so that I could take off with these reporters and we could have a jolly time. And I don't know how it was done, but we did. We got into this car, it was a Volkswagen. And we were driving backwards along the street. We're still in Venice, kind of, but we're still in Italy. We're driving backwards along the street, and we're in the back seat. And there's nobody driving, and the car's going backwards up the street that rose slightly in an incline, going towards the edge of town, going past these Italian buildings looking like, I remember Italian buildings looking for when I was in the room. And I was getting a little uptight, because we were in the back seat trying to get it on, the three of us. But there was nobody driving the car. The car was going backwards, looking out the back window, and we're coming up to the end of the street. And the road was inclining, going up. At the end of the street there, the town ended, and it was just, there was like this overlook. The street ended at this precipice. And the car stopped, and we got out, and looked out on this beautiful view of mountains and meadows, and the sun was low down in the west and shining just as golden as the sun can ever shine when it's down low in the west, and there were blue and white clouds, some of them heavy and dark and fat with water hanging over the mountains, and the fields were as green as they could get, tinged with this gold color, offset by the blue of the clouds in the sky, and the white, and then peaks in the background. I don't remember any snow on the mountain peaks, but they were there. It was a kind of a jumbled, rugged terrain, but right down in front of us there was this little meadow. And I was saying, yes, yes, I can remember, I do remember. This is what it was like. I do remember it was like this. And the two reporters were kind of egging me on, saying, yes, yes, this is it. Yes, you can remember, this is it. And I started telling them there were some wagons down in the field, down to my left. And in front of us, there were these old wagons sitting in the field. And I was telling the reporters, well, yeah, people in Italy, you know, still have to use wagons to get around because they're not as technologically... Advanced is not the word that I use. They're not as high-tech as we are. They're not as technologically oriented or something. But the wagons were not, I don't think, Italian wagons. They were like Conestoga wagons with no covering, no awning on them. They were like the kind of farm wagons you would see in either the old American West or in Hollywood's version of it. And then there was this big white house that was right there at the end of the street, on the east side of the street. And this is where the reporters lived, and they disappeared into the house. And I said, wait, where'd you go? We weren't done yet. We never had gotten done because I was too busy about the car driving backwards towards this cliff, kind of. It wasn't really a cliff, it was just an overlook. And so, now this house, this looked like the kind of apartment buildings we lived in Italy. on government property, U.S. government property only. It was a little bit older and more Italian. So anyway, I go up there and I start knocking on the door. And the blonde wouldn't even answer her door. The brown-haired one answered her door and invited me in, but she was real cold. Her attitude had changed completely. She was real cold. And I couldn't see into the living room. I could see kind of like down through this entryway, and there was a doorway on the left that went into somewhere. And then beyond that, you went around a curve and there was a living room. And there was a window in the wall on the right, letting in light. And what would that light have been? That light would have been coming from the south side. So there's a window in the south wall. Anyway, I heard somebody say something, and I had an image of somebody sitting in a, like a lazy boy recliner. With a recliner. But in the dream, it doesn't seem like I actually saw this so much as knew it was there. Around the corner where I couldn't see was the brown-haired woman's husband. And she was telling me that the blonde was also married. Do you know? Keeping a very business-like tone out of that, I was asking her, well, where's the blonde? Aren't you all in? What happened?
Going to the war.
She was saying something like, well, you know, she's married. Then the third dream, I was playing D-Day with Steve. Only he was introducing all these new pieces, new counters, and new rules, and I kept saying, no, I just want to get the regular counters and the regular rules and just play this thing. Just play it. And he was bringing in all these new counters, saying, no, these are this and these are those. And I'm saying, well, where are the regular ones? What's going on here? And he had little plastic airplanes, like the ones I used to play with when I was a kid. And those were going to stand for certain airstrike capabilities. And all this. It was very confusing. I couldn't learn how to play. And he was already starting, and I hadn't even set up. I mean, he was defending, or I think he was the German. Yeah, he was the German. He had some plastic ME-272. And it was like play had started. And of course, in D-Day, the Allied player moves first, only I hadn't moved because I couldn't figure out what was going on, but he was moving. That was really weird. Then I woke up from that, and that was the end of those three dreams, which, with suitable manipulation, may be convertible into literature.
Proceed.
And cash.
Yeah. Consequently,